to Ethel Thrall interviewing John Rudd at Hollywood in Lakeville, Connecticut. Now, I want a little bit about your history.
Well, before I start on the history, let me give you a current bit of history. I got up at 1:30 this morning and again at 2:30 to watch the total eclipse of the moon, because it's the longest total eclipse that we've had by some 2 seconds since 1859. And it was a beautiful clear night and an unusual chance to watch it. So I did.
Good. No, we know. Okay.
One of the questions that I am most often asked since I moved to Lakeville is why the house is called Hollywood when my name is Rudd and it's a family home. And the answer is that my ancestors in Lakeville were all named Holly, spelled with an E. And the house was built, as probably everyone knows, by Governor Alexander Holly shortly before he became governor. His daughter, Mariah Coffing Holly, who was born in 1842, married William Beardsley, spelled B-E-A-R-D-S-L-E-E, Rudd, on June 7th, 1865. And that was how the Rudds and the Hollies got together, and why my name is Rudd. But my grandmother's name, you see, was Holly. And Grandfather Rudd was born in 1838 and died on January 9th, 1901, during my father's senior year at Yale. But Grandmother continued to live in Lakeville until 1914 and died on March 25th of that year when she was on a visit to my parents' house in Asheville, North Carolina. Grandfather William Rudd and his wife had 5 children. The first was Alexander Holly Rudd, who was born in March 1867 and married Theoline Banker Oliver in November 1888. The second child was Fanny Rudd, who was born in May 1869 and married Martin Cantine of Saugerties, New York, in June 1890. She died in 1936. Holly, by the way, died in 1949. The third child was George Robert Rudd, who was born in November 1872, but died in March 1877, and was remembered only by Alexander Holly Rudd, who remembered him when he was a baby. The fourth child, Malcolm Day Rudd, was born in April 1877 and married Eva Cook in 1904. Malcolm died January 21st, 1942. The fifth child was my father, Charles Edward Rudd, who was born January 2nd, 1881, and on April 25th, 1905, married my mother, Emma Sands, S-A-N-D-S, Reese, R-E-E-S, who was born July 16th, 1884. Dad died January 10th, 1950, and mother on April 17th, 1965. I was their only child. I was born in Asheville, North Carolina, on January 19th, 1917. I remember a number of anecdotes that Dad used to tell about his boyhood, because he was a Lakeville boy until he was fully grown. Some of these might be of interest. He was 7 years old at the time of the blizzard of 1888 and remembered that the snow in front of the house had drifted up to the windowsills of the second floor hall. And they had to tunnel to get out the front door. The railroad at that time ran through what might be called our backyard. And there was a deep cut there in order to provide for a bridge, which we used to get back and forth to the lake to bring ice to the ice house. That sort of thing. And the cut, according to Dan, had drifted full, so that it was a week before they could get it dug out and get a train through to Norton. Dad was still alive at the time that Governor Holly was still living, although the governor died when Dad was only six. They used to call them the twins because great-grandfather Holly used to take Dad on his knee and tell him stories, and they were reasonably inseparable when Dad was a very young boy. In listing the dates of Dad's brothers and sister, you might not have noticed that there was a close age between Malcolm and my father, Malcolm being only 4 years older, but Fanny, his sister, was 12 years older, and Alexander Holyrood, who was always known as Holly, was 14 years older. So that there was nearly a generation difference between my father, the youngest, and Holly, the oldest. In fact, Holly's older son, Bill, was only 4 years younger than my mother. And as a result, Bill's children, who are my first cousins once removed, are my age.
Well, it happens.
This has caused many questions. Dad lived at Hollywood from shortly after he was born until he was married in 1905. When he was a schoolboy, he went to the academy in the younger years, and to Hotchkiss when he reached high school age. And in those days, local boys could go to Hotchkiss at no charge.
Wonderful.
Dad used to describe a typical school day as getting up at about 4:30, going down to the barn to milk the several cows that they had, and feed the horses and the chickens and the hogs, and drive the cows up to what's called the upper farm on Belgo, where Theodore Rudd now lives. Then he would walk back home and have his breakfast and walk to Hotchkiss for his day at school. When school was over, he would walk home.
I'd be exhausted.
And I would be too. He would walk home and go back up to the upper farm and collect the cows and drive them home and do whatever cleaning of stalls and things is necessary, and have his supper, and do his lessons by oil lamp or candlelight, and go to bed in order to get some sleep so he could get up at 4:30 the next morning. I don't think I could have survived one such day as
that. That was something, wasn't it? Well, they had stamina in those days, I guess, or
that,
I don't know what it is.
What bred sturdy Yankees.
I guess so.
My mother's family, the Reeses, lived in New York, where her father was professor of astronomy at Columbia University.
And that's where you get astronomy?
That's where you get astronomy. He was the man who worked out all the standard time zones around the world.
Oh, wonderful.
And the French made the Chevalier of the Legion of Honor in recognition of some of his international.
That's great.
They used to rent a house in Lakeville sometimes for the summer. And for 2 or 3 years, rented what was then called the Harrison House, and later is where Theodora Gray lived, and now is the so-called something Chittenden House across the road where Dick Walsh now lives.
Oh, yes.
And it was the Moore Chittenden House. In 1904, Mother and her family were living up there, and she had met Dad probably the summer before that But at any rate, she and Dad became engaged on the front porch of that house before she went back to New York for the winter in the late summer of 1904. And they were married in New York, April 25th, 1905.
Wonderful.
I felt a personal blow when the front porch of the house was torn off when the Walshes bought it. But I must admit it improved the appearance of the house a great deal.
But memories.
What memories, right. When Mother and Dad were first married, they lived here in Lakeville, but not in Hollywood. They lived in what Dad called the Eastmead Cottage, which is the house that subsequently belonged to Malcolm Rudd and now is known as the Demarest Apartments, down almost next to the Holly Williams house. At the time, it was separated from the Holly Williams house by the Gateway Inn, which was a large wooden structure that I remember from my boyhood. Dad did considerable surveying around the town shortly after he was married, as he had taken an engineering degree in Yale and learned to survey as part of that. One of the things that he did of perhaps special interest was to survey the Ore Hill mine, which was difficult because the iron ore was magnetic and made it impractical to use a compass. Everything had to be done by difference of angle and using a transit. Mm-hmm. This was not easy when he was surveying the underground tunnels, and we have a map of all the tunnels of the mine based on his survey. And he found at the time that had they dug another 100 feet or so in one direction, they would have come under into the bottom of a pond and drowned themselves out.
Yeah, right.
So he prevented that. His first engineering job after getting out of Yale in 1901 was to install in 1904 the water turbine that used to run the grindstones and the machinery at the Holly Manufacturing Company, the knife factory that great-grandfather founded in 1844, and which at the moment houses the Lakeville Journal offices. There used to be a water wheel there, and that was taken out and replaced by the much more efficient turbine. And some of the family photographs show the excavation and the work of installing the turbine in 1904. After that, Dad joined a family business on Mother's side of the family called Hans Ries Sons, which had headquarters in New York and the leather tannery in Asheville, North Carolina. For the first year or so with the company, Mother and Dad lived in East Orange on Halsted Street. And then in 1910, I believe, he was transferred to Asheville to assume managership of the tannery there. The manager of the tannery at that time was one of my mother's five uncles, named Arthur F. Ries. And typical of his close involvement with the work of the tannery, he wore a cutaway to work every day. A tannery is not the pleasantest place to work, and I dare say he usually stayed in his office. I remember him as being a rather heavy-set man on the order of President Taft, with a rather bushy mustache and sideburns, and always wearing a wing collar, whether accompanied by cutaway or not. His wife was very tall and straight and slim, and always wore floor-length black dresses, and I was scared to death of her. The reason Dad was transferred to Asheville was that Uncle Arthur, who was somewhat of a socialite, had become friendly with the Vanderbilts, who had built Biltmore House in Asheville. And as a result, Uncle Arthur was invited to go pheasant shooting on the Vanderbilt estate occasionally and mingled with a crowd of that kind of people. Once a year, he and his wife would feel it necessary to repay their social obligation by throwing a large party, which usually cost about three times Uncle Arthur's annual salary, and this caused problems. He had gotten very much into debt, and the reason that Dad was sent to Asheville to assume managership was so that the Reese family could ship Uncle Arthur off to Europe while settling up his debts. As I mentioned, he was one of five boys, and they also had a sister, Aunt Josephine. And all six of them were over 6 feet tall, which was unusual in the middle 1800s. When Uncle Arthur was in New York, about to depart for Europe, he was talking with his sister, and just convinced that he would not live to come home, he said, "I just know it, Joe. I won't make it. I'll come home in a box." And she looked at him and said, "Don't do it, Arthur. Be cremated." That was the sympathy he got from her.
Right.
Dad continued as manager with some success and was especially busy the summer before I was born in 1916. In July 1916, very heavy rains occurred and a large dam up in the mountains burst, with the result that there was a very bad flood in Asheville, which almost totally washed away the tannery and caused major damage otherwise, including washing out the railroads and so on. Dad managed to get the tannery rebuilt and into operation by October of that year, and had just about resumed operation when a German spy set fire to the place and burned up about half of it. Because, of course, at that time, it was in the middle of World War I. Dad got the tannery going again by around Thanksgiving, and the company gave him a very nice present of Christmas in appreciation of his work. I was born in January, and Dad had not only the tannery worries, but worrying about how all of his extra overtime and that sort of thing was affecting my mother, and wondering whether I would really arrive on the scene or not.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That's wonderful.
One other anecdote about the tannery. It was situated in Asheville because of the large amounts of oak and spruce trees whose bark was used for making the tanning liquor to tan the leather. And once a year, they would operate the grinding machine, which was like a present-day high-speed brush chopper, to grind the bark to make the tanning liquor. The night before they were to start this process one year, Dad woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning, having had a very vivid dream that if they started the bark mill that day, the operator would be killed because there would be found a crack in the rotor of the grinding. The dream was so vivid that Dad immediately called the master mechanic at the plant and told him to be sure that they did not start the bark mill under any circumstances, and that Dad would be down early and wanted it completely disassembled in his presence to see if it was all right. Dad got there early, and the mechanics disassembled the mill, and sure enough, there was a crack in the rotor, exactly where Dad had dreamed it was, and had they started the mill, it would have exploded and killed the operator. As I had mentioned earlier, I was born in Asheville, and I lived there until I was 18, going to private schools, for the most part, since the public schools in town in those days were not adequate to allow you to get into a high school or later a college if you wanted to. I had been entered at Hotchkiss from the day of my birth because my father went there, and his brother Malcolm was in the first graduating class at Hotchkiss.
Well, Marcia didn't say that.
Or so I was
told.
Yeah,
well, she probably.
But In the meantime, the Asheville School, which had been a boys' preparatory school for some years, had been taken over by the ex-headmaster of the Hill School, and was a very excellent school, only 8 miles from home. So it seemed foolish to ship me all the way to Lakeville and back every year when I could get equivalent education across town. And the result was that I went to Asheville School instead of Hotchkiss. I always, however, spent my summers in Lakeville. I think there has never been a time that our house, Hollywood, has been occupied by anyone outside the family, except possibly for one summer. It was sometimes rented out to other members of the family, but almost always Mother and Dad and I would come up to Lakeville during the summer. Mother and I usually coming up in July and going back in September, and Dad coming up for his annual vacation in August. In those days, there was good train service in the United States.
Right.
And we always took the train from Asheville to Lakeville. Mother and I, and generally a cook and a maid, because servants were not expensive in the South, and we would bring two up with us for the summer, would get on the train at Asheville around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Dad always had a drawing room for us, and the two servants shared a section outside because they had to have their meals sent back since blacks were not served in the dining room.
Well, that's right too, right.
We would arrive in Washington around breakfast time, and as I remember, I usually used the time that the train was standing in the station in Washington for getting dressed, because I was not adept at standing on one foot in a moving train while trying to get my pants on.
No, right.
We would have breakfast just after leaving Washington and arrive in New York around noon. Then we would take a taxi from the Pennsylvania station where the train came in to Grand Central, and usually have lunch at the Commodore Hotel. Then we would get the 3 o'clock train to Lakeville, having got all our baggage and everything transferred, and Abe Martin would meet us in a car when we arrived at Millerton about 6. Mother would have arranged beforehand for someone in Lakeville to have opened the house enough for us to stay there and to have fixed a supper for us when we arrived. Dad retained a gardener. The first that I can remember was named Mike Moore. And he was followed by John McCarthy. And they would usually have planted a vegetable garden so that we would have corn and peas and carrots and parsley and lettuce and those good things.
Yeah, right.
Fresh for the summer. And Mike or John would have got the yard in shape and things like that. But the house had been closed since the previous September each year. And one of the first things we had to do was to glue back the wallpaper that had come loose when the walls perspired
in the
spring.
Oh, yeah, right. I can understand.
Because
that.
The thick walls, it was cooler inside than out, right. And a lot of condensation occurred. The house wasn't lavishly furnished, and in fact was primarily hook rugs and wicker furniture because we used it only
summer
in
home.
The summertime.
Right.
I didn't know any people my age in Lakeville because of only being here for a few weeks each summer. But Dad's brothers and sister and their children were always in town, and it was sort of a family reunion affair. every summer we'd have family picnics and get-togethers and all that kind of thing. So I really didn't too much miss not having companions my own age.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to like to go swimming, and Dad and I would go fishing quite often, so there was always something to do. We used to get in the car and go over with a picnic supper to Silver Mountain, just south of Norton. Or we would climb Bald Peak.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Or we would go to Bashfish Falls. And it was always a fun summer.
Oh, sure.
And then Dad would go back after his vacation. Mother and I would stay on until the beginning of September to close up the house for the winter. And then we would leave in time for me to get back to school in Asheville. In those days, we didn't have vandalism in the town. And if we went away and happened to have left a rake in the front lawn when we went in September, it would likely still be there when we came back the next July.
Yeah, the good old days.
Yes. So the window breakage and things like that were not a problem. We did, of course, have to arrange to have all of the plumbing drained.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sure.
And the electricity turned off and the telephone turned off and things like that. But those were the major precautions taken in shutting up the house and literally abandoning it for 8 months.
I know.
A few anecdotes from my childhood days in the summer here. I don't remember a great deal about how the town looked because I had nothing to compare it with. But I do remember when the post office used to be about where the beauty shop or barber shop is now. And of course the Gateway Inn was in operation then with its large group of summer visitors and the little suspension bridge across the pond that everybody used to walk across to get to the town grove and so on. In those days, the family owned the grove and Aunt Fan rented the portion now used as the town grove to a man named Timmins, who was an engraver in Philadelphia.
Dave Timmons,
yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And he used to come up and conduct a boat livery there for fishermen and people to rent the boat. And he had a little gasoline launch called the Thelma that was painted white with brown trim and a little inboard two-cylinder gasoline engine.
Mm.
And if I had been especially good, and Dad was in a good mood, he would sometimes take me down and we'd take a trip around the lake in the Thelma.
That's cute.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
I remember very well the old Holly Block, which had been built in 1895 and housed at that time Leverty's Pharmacy on the corner by Holly Street. And then there was Boardman's, I was going to say food store, it was sort of a general store. They had thread and dry goods and things, but they also had wonderful cookies and things that I was not supposed to have. So after I got my weekly allowance, I would generally manage to get myself down to Boardman somehow when no one was looking and buy a package of Necco wafers because I loved the different colors and the different flavors.
Yeah, Necco wafers.
And they had some marshmallow coconut covered cakes or cookies that were 2 or 3 inches in diameter. And they came in strawberry and chocolate and vanilla.
Yes, I remember those.
I used to love those.
Yeah.
So I was a frequent customer at Gordon. And later, I think, Harry Miller's plumbing shop may have been there at one time.
Yeah, probably in the corner there.
And the Lakeville Journal at that time was in either a building that's been torn down or the building that the Atlantic Flyway or something has now. And the telephone office used to be in what more recently was the Duverrier building. It's the building with the white trim.
Oh, yeah, where the community fuel is now.
Where community fuel is now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. And I remember when I was in college, and Dad was in Lakeville at that time, not for the year round, but for some reason he was here anyway. And I placed a long distance call from Princeton because I needed money. And I could hear the operator in Lakeville come onto the phone. And the operator in Princeton said she had a person call for Mr. Charles Rudd. And the Lakeville operator said, no use ringing the house. Charlie's having his hair cut at the barber shop. I'll ring Chet Thurston instead. And she did. And Mr. Thurston answered. And the operator said, Charlie Rudd's boy's on the phone. Get Charlie. Probably needs money. So I talked to Dad, and the operator was right. I did need money. But it was a lot more personal than the dial tone system that we have now. The telegraph system was also interesting, and now pretty much a thing of the past. I don't remember the telegraph operator's name. She was a tall, thin, and I don't mean this in a mean way at all, spinsterish looking woman.
Yeah.
And just as nice as she could be.